The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 9th chapter. Glory to you, Lord. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to Jesus. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw the glory of Jesus, and the two men stood with him. Just as the men were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my Son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. On the next day, when they came down from the mountain and a great crowd met Jesus, just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him, and he will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
Please be seated. Like many of you, Abby and I are hooked on several TV series with our Netflix account. One of the TV series that we enjoy watching most is a series called Broadchurch, a murder mystery series from the BBC whose story revolves around a murder in a small seaside village in England. And, you know, one of the things I think that make this series of Broadchurch so vivid is its characters. Except what differentiates this British TV series, I think, from an American series is that all of the characters are deeply and many times frustratingly flawed. The detectives, played by David Tennant and Olivia Colman, who are masters at what they do, they're frustratingly just encumbered by these huge health problems, these obsessive disorder tendencies, these scarred family histories, and terrible social skills. Yet, you feel a connection to them, I think, because of this. The story itself can be electrifying, as well as hard to watch. It's not just tidied up, like many American TV shows would strive to do. It's a little bit more gritty. And I think that the Transfiguration story, the story that we read today in Luke, is a bit similar. It's been shined up over the past couple years or a couple centuries. And I'm sure that you have had many sermons on the subject of mountaintop experiences with this story. All is hunky-dory, and Jesus and the disciples get to bask in the light, free from all burdens for a little while. Except earlier in this chapter, we get Herod pondering to himself how he's going to get rid of and murder all of these blasphemous prophets. In fact, he had just beheaded John the Baptist. Jesus himself foretells of his betrayal to Peter and his witness to the hunger and need of 5,000 people whom he feeds just prior to this story. Even when Jesus is with Moses and Elijah, the story says the subject matter of their conversation isn't exactly rosy. They were talking about his departure. So this isn't some nice sunset and sea breezes type of scene with Jesus and his disciples all hanging out in hammocks. No. It's a scene of light, however, that's surrounded by struggle, by death, and by uncertainty. It's an amazing and magnificent mountaintop experience, but it's also surrounded by those hard-to-watch situations. So like some scenes in Broadchurch, where the detectives stumble on something suspenseful, something gross, or something hard to watch, Jesus and his disciples walk down the mountain. And they come across a possessed child that is convulsing by the demons. Not exactly your G-rated Disney story. Jesus doesn't stay on the mountain to bask in the light, imperfect as it is. You know, I was just at a pastor's conference at the Isaac Walton Hotel in just outside of Glacier National Park, where a speaker talked, Marty Stortz, who is from Augsburg College, talked about a migrant God. A God that is always on the move. I think this story is an incredible example of how God is always on the move and not a God that sits on mountaintops. Some of you may have heard the movie Cleopatra, a 1963 four-hour-long marathon of a movie that stars Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, and Rex Harrison. And I don't know if any of you have watched all 4 hours of this movie, but it was actually a disaster from a production standpoint. From the very beginning, it had multiple directors. There were many times when sets were built twice, when actors got sick, and a plot that really had no point. In fact, it almost bankrupted its producer, 20th Century Fox. I haven't seen this whole movie. I can't claim to have seen all 4 hours of it. But a review that I read of this film really said, this film is lacking any real depth because it doesn't revolve around any kind of storyline or revolve around any kind of characters that we care about. Instead, it highlights characters and the story revolves around sexy actors that doesn't portray anything useful for us. Stories that dwell, I think, too much in the mountaintop experiences are stories that really aren't very useful. They're not really worth telling. They're fake, in fact, pointless, and never end. There would have been no point to Jesus Christ, and no one really would have cared if he had stayed up on the spotlight on that mountain. There was no altar, no monument, no marker of this moment, because it was time to get to work. I saw Jesus off the mountain at this church, actually, just last week. On their way to Bible study, Richard and Diane Tamke ran into a man who was wearing nothing but shorts and a t-shirt in our parking lot. And if you remember from Sunday of last week, it was snowing. Richard struck up a conversation and learned that this individual was on his way home to Phoenix, Arizona, with his brother, when the car that they were in, for some reason, hit ice and crashed and even rolled. He told both Richard and I that he had survived, but that his brother was not so lucky. And I couldn't figure out if that meant that his brother was killed or if that meant that he was severely injured in the hospital. Either way, this man was in need. He actually joined us for Bible study last week, and he asked that he simply be in our church so that he could warm up. And so, after fetching these coveralls for him from his truck, he joined us for worship and left our congregation with some food from the pantry and our prayers. Perhaps some of you met this man as well last Sunday. It wasn't pretty. For our church, especially for Richard, I think it was the coming down the mountain. It was a getting to work. You know, many churches see themselves as sanctuaries, as places that are set apart, removed from the Word so that they can be closer to God. But after seeing Richard's and many of your warm and patient responses last week, I don't think that that's who we are as a church. I think we are a community who is called to go down the mountain rather than stay up there. And you know what? In doing so, if this is something that our community does do, we have to brace ourselves because it's not going to be G-rated. We probably will see things that aren't very appropriate, that are hard, that are uncomfortable, that are challenging. And we, like the detectives in Broadchurch, are frustratingly flawed. Yet God has chosen us. God has chosen the flawed disciples who walked down that mountain with Jesus. You know, there was something peculiar about that text that we read this morning. I'm not sure if you caught it. We talked about it in Bible study this morning. The very first sentence actually is kind of a mistranslation. It should say, "On the eighth day, Jesus and his disciples went up the mountain." On the eighth day. What is the eighth day? I don't really remember what God did on the eighth day from Sunday school, do you? And there are many interpretations from biblical scholars about what the eighth day and what Luke means about the eighth day. But what I think is that this powerfully represents and emphasizes a new creation. For God, it took God 7 days to create earth, to create us. And now we are in the eighth day, a new day, a transforming day. A new creation in Jesus Christ has and is coming. And that promise begins here in this story on this eighth day. So then what happens in going down the mountain and witnessing these things that are uncomfortable? We are then to move into this new creation on helping God with bringing the eighth day into our time, into our place, into our reality. Now is not the time for us to stick on that mountain. And so, as we bring in this eighth day and the promises of this new creation, of healing, of hope, of equality, may we remember that God is with us, that God journeys with us as we go down that mountain. And may we continue to have the courage to be on the move like God is, to follow God in the yeast, to bring healing and wholeness to situations that are uncomfortable, and to be reminded of a graceful God who loves us despite us being frustratingly flawed. Amen. Thank you.